The gospel that we have is we're going to be diving deep into the Gospel of John, chapter 6. And in terms of any part of the gospel, there's really none which is more devastating to the popularity of Jesus than this one, John 6. It's the bread of life discourse. Because we started right into it today, and right today is where Jesus is at sort of the high point, the pinnacle of his worldly popularity. In terms of just the massive number of people who want to come be close to him, to see these signs. Because he has been healing people and performing these great miracles. And you can imagine how that works, right? Somebody sees it or they experience it for themselves. An incredible sign. Someone's healed. That this is just isn't some regular teacher. And what do they do? What do you do when something exciting happens? Well, you reach out to your friends. You go and you say, you got to see this. You got to experience it for yourself. And so they hurriedly bring them to him. And the crowd size keeps growing and growing and growing. And just before this, this passage, the feeding of the 5,000, is in every single gospel. How powerful of an impact it made on those earliest Christians. Every single gospel writer recounts it because of the incredible miracle it was. But you hear that the people and the crowd size is so great it was threatening to crush Jesus. That's how many people were there. So that's the beginning of John 6, the bread of life discourse. By the end of it, in 1 month, you're going to hear that as Jesus again and again emphasizes, you must eat my body and drink my blood to have life within you. And like, you can't mean that. Again and again, he emphasizes it. And you hear that at the end of John 6, many of those who were once following Jesus went back to their former way of life because they found this too hard to believe. John 6, he starts out thousands upon thousands upon thousands crushing in to be near him and to see him. By the end of it, there's just a little remnant left. It's devastating. But why it peaks today? Because today the people just want to come for more and more now. Because he's filling their bellies. They're hungry. He fills their bellies. He's just spent a bunch of time healing their bodies. And they want to carry him off and make him king. We're similar. We want people in office who are going to fill our wallets. Do you remember the first George Bush? He said, it's the economy, stupid. It's what people vote for. It's what they vote on, for better or worse. They vote on their wallets. They want people who are going to fill their wallets. This man is healing their bodies, and he's filling their bellies in incredible ways. And they want to carry him off and make him king, which you're like, isn't that a great Jesus? Isn't that what you want? No! Because that's a superficial king. He can provide all these external things for us. He's doing that as a sign because what Jesus wants for his people is to do something much deeper than that. He wants to heal their souls of all sorts of pain. He wants to fill their souls where their deepest hunger is at. He wants to do something more. And as he begins to unveil that, they begin to turn away. You could almost imagine an exit interview with some of the people, the many who will leave. And if it's an honest exit interview, right? Because usually you just say nice stuff and, oh, well, I'm not. An honest exit interview, Jesus, I was all about you when you're talking about filling our needs and healing us, all these physical things. But once you got into that crazy talk of eating your body, drinking your blood, I mean, that was, come on. So I got to go. The problem is there's a difference, everyone. There's a difference between wanting Jesus himself and wanting the things that Jesus does for me. There's a huge difference between the two of those. They're not the same. Between wanting Jesus himself and loving Jesus himself, or just wanting and loving the things that Jesus can do for me. It's like if you have a kid who just wants you to keep doing things for them, that's great, but they don't actually care too much about you. Because in this other one, the things that Jesus can do for me, he becomes a vending machine. I come, I put my prayer in, I get something, that's great, thanks Jesus, see you next time. The other thing is Jesus being desired for himself and wanting him. Him and him alone. There's a difference between the two of those. How does Jesus solve this? By giving them he himself in the bread of life, the Eucharist. That what they desire and hunger for is Jesus, which will bring them healing, both physically and spiritually, which will fill them in the deepest hunger that they have. And so he opens their heart today in this gospel, in this beginning of the Bread of Life discourse, this miracle where he feeds the thousands. And everything he's doing here, this is the beautiful thing about this, everything he's doing here is a mirror image of the Catholic Mass, of what we do every week. It prefigures it. You can start from the very beginning of it. Jesus comes up the mountain and he brings them up the mountain. When you come into the physical church building, almost every Catholic church in a classic architecture, you're going to come upstairs on the outside of it. Churches don't have to be built that way. You can build them at ground level. It'd probably be easier because then the handicap access, much simpler to do. But they're built where you have to come upstairs. One of my home parishes in Linton, when I was small, it seemed like there was 100 stairs and they were this steep going up. It was probably about 20. But a little bit of ice, and I remember you had to cling on and sort of make your way up there. But you climb up stairs on your way into the church. It's meant to symbolize climbing up a mountain. And as you come closer to the altar, into the sanctuary, this is always meant to be elevated. Not so you can see me better, but as you're climbing higher and higher up the mountain, even unto the tabernacle itself and Mount Calvary, where Jesus is at. All the time in the Bible, the place where people encounter God is on a mountaintop. The Garden of Eden was on a mountaintop. Mount Sinai, where Moses received the commandments, is on a mountaintop. Mount Tabor, where Jesus is transfigured, is on a mountaintop. Calvary is a mountaintop. Because it's the place where we, through real effort of ours, climb as high as we can get and God descends down to us. It's a place of encounter with God on a mountaintop. And so when you come to Mass, as you walk into the very church building itself, you're climbing up the mountain, up those stairs, to encounter God there. And then we hear that they sit down and that Jesus teaches them. Sitting is the teaching position. The first part of the Mass is the liturgy of the word. Throughout most of the readings and during the homily, you sit as receiving and learning. And what it's meant to do, if we listen with our heart open to the readings, and if the homily is worth a dang, is it's meant to create a hunger in your heart as you hear God's word, that your hearts are meant to become hungry. And you desire what Jesus is giving here. And you desire him. And that hunger then leads into the next part of the Mass, the liturgy of the Eucharist. But before that, we do what Jesus himself asked his disciples to do. Jesus, because he's God, could have just multiplied food out of thin air for the people. But what God always wants to do is to make us a part of what he's doing. And so instead he says, go see what food the people have. 5 loaves, 2 fish. And have them bring that forward. Have them bring the little that they have forward. Before we enter into the liturgy of the Eucharist, the gifts are brought forward. The bread and the wine. That's an offering from you, the people. That's what's going to be transformed. A collection is taken up. All of these things that you are giving out of the little you have to God, and that what you give is what is lifted up in the sacrifice. And so when the ushers ask you to bring the gifts up, it's a real honor. Say yes. Because you bring that up and you're representing the kid who has the 5 loaves and 2 fish. And you're bringing that forward. And then Jesus takes the loaf and he prays a prayer of thanksgiving. The word Eucharist means thanksgiving. The priest then prays the Eucharistic prayer, lifting up the bread. And that gift is then transformed. And it's multiplied in terms of what is there and what we receive. Then you come to receive Jesus, the deepest hunger is filled, and then at the end, all the fragments are gathered. After we've had communion, we gather the fragments of the Eucharist, and you can see, I'm there with the corporal cloth, or the deacon is, and every little piece is gathered together. One of my first assignments, someone said, "Father, you take a little while doing the dishes up there." I said, "Yeah, they're pretty important dishes." Because every little piece of that is Jesus, his very body itself. And so it's gathered together there. And we gather the fragments and we keep them in the tabernacle. And you hear that there's 12 wicker baskets that are still full with it. This represents the 12 tribes of Israel, the 12 apostles, who were the first priests, the ones who would bring out to the whole world this gift of the bread of life, so that the hunger of the whole world would be filled. This is the beautiful, wonderful gift which we're going to enter into in meditating upon through Gospel, the 6th chapter of John, over the next month. It's also, it has a tragic character to it, because by the end of it, many will leave him. From everything and everyone to very few. And this is the truth today as well. We know many, many people, friends of ours, Catholic, who just stay away from the Mass. What I want you to do is this, and I'm going to plead with you. I want you to think of one person or one family that you know who stay away from this gift of the Eucharist. And what I want you to do over the course of this next month is just be faithfully praying for them. Be praying for them in a faithful way. And then in a month, after you've been praying for them, invite them to Mass. Invite them to come to Mass, and then maybe to your house afterward for brunch. They can be fed in multiple ways. Because here's the thing, everyone. They're not any different than you. They're not any different than you. It took someone in your life bringing you to Jesus. And it takes you now bringing others to Jesus. You needed someone to bring you to Jesus, and they need you. Because this is part of why many left him, because as we'll see, they receive the gift of Jesus in the Eucharist, and then it requires something of them to become what they receive, to become a sacrifice for others. And many people hear part of that, and they're like, "I like that. I don't like that part." But I'm going to ask you, and I'm going to plead with you. Take a month, pray for one person or one family, and then invite them. Don't be afraid of rejection. It's not you who's being rejected. Because in the end, we all of us, and everyone in this world has one hunger. And we have one deep hunger. And there's only one person who can fill that hunger: Jesus Christ.